Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Talking about chicken a la king, mango and garbanzo tabbouleh, little potatoes and vegetables with roasted garlic and basil, zucchini ziti, granola fruit bar. Look at all this beautiful food.
Welcome to Green Eggs and Dan, where I interview amazing people with amazing minds, but all I care about is what is in their fridge. My guest today, an incredible actor, writer, director, beloved acting coach. He's acted in the shows Without a Trace, Criminal Minds, Gilmore Girls, Windfall, Mad TV, 6 Feet Under, and many, many more. He played Agent Burley in Ant-Man and the Wasp, and Bleedlesnort in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. You know he's getting that Comic-Con money. Most importantly, he is a fellow regular at one of our favorite restaurants in L.A. We met as diners at Horses. True. Please welcome the man who has such a handsome beard. It is totally being wasted by being on a podcast. Benjamin Davis. Hi, Ben.
Dan, how the hell are you?
I'm very good. I'm very good. You know, you are an organic restaurant friend. And I have a handful of organic restaurant friends in my life where it's just the watering hole that brings us together.
Well, it is. It's an important, I think, thing, particularly we both lived in this neighborhood that we both love, I think, for quite some time. And a local haunt, when you get lucky enough that your local haunt is as erudite a locale as the Pikey once was and as Horses is now. Yeah, it's pretty good. I have come to know a great many people through my borderline manic insistence on sitting at that one location in Hollywood.
Anyone who's gone to the restaurant Horses, which is one of the most famous, coolest restaurants in LA now, has seen Ben. Ben, basically, they've hot glue gunned his ass to this one bar stool at the end, and he's sitting there. He's a fixture. He never leaves, and it's always you put a smile on my face whenever I walk in and I see you there.
My aim was to be, you know, if it's a Cheers paradigm, I always sort of imagine myself as Sam, but I think we're going to have to land at Norm.
I would say you're a Norm in the streets, but a Sam in the sheets.
Hey,
that's what I would say.
Let's get that out there. I'll take it. I'll take it.
All right, let's get to your fridge before we get into any more.
You guys can see. I'm so concerned about this. God damn it, I need therapy before I handle you looking at my refrigerator.
You get to see Ben's fridge. Everyone gets to see it on my Instagram, at StandUpDan.
Oh my God.
This is a college fridge. This is a college student fridge. You're a successful actor. You are...
No.
You got the blue check mark before people could pay for it.
It's true.
You're a man of screen, big, small. You're living the dream, but your fridge is so aspirational.
What's amazing to me though is this angle. Now that I look at it, I can't see any of that shit on the top shelf when I look in there. I don't know what the age is of that mayonnaise. That's gone unattended for a very long time.
Okay, so let's just start.
Okay, yeah, you do your thing. I'll shut up.
No, you know, there's a lot of condiments. We've got Condiment City.
Yes.
And first of all, the thing that hits my eyes right away, the glaring thing that I see is an omission. 2 Big Booty Crispers, completely empty, nothing. No vegetables, no fruits, nothing.
That's true.
That's not good. All right.
Well, I have a defense. I can defend myself.
Your cheese drawer is full to the brim, and it looks like there's cheese on top of the cheese drawer that won't even fit in the cheese drawer. But your fruits and vegetable aisle completely empty. What say you?
Well, what I say is this: First of all, I never think of that. Is that the cheese drawer? Because I think of that as the meat and cheese drawer. So I could be wrong about that. But there's cold cuts in there. There's cheese in there. The crisper, what I say to it is, and this is a pretty good defense, I don't tend to keep vegetables around long enough that they sit in the fridge. I get them as I need them. I use them as I need them. In our neighborhood, you know, we've got a farmer's market every Monday. And I happen to live next door to what some people call Bristol Farms, and I call the world's most expensive refrigerator. So I typically will get fresh fruits, probably not nearly as often as I should, but I get fresh vegetables as needed. I am honestly a bit surprised that I don't have, I know why I don't. Scallions I used to keep in the crisper until somebody let me know that the thing to do with scallions, green onions, is leave them on the kitchen counter in water, and they'll stay alive until you use them.
First of all, I think you have to pick a lane. Is it scallions or is it green onions? Okay.
On the East Coast, it's scallions, and on the West Coast, it's green onions.
Oh, is that true? Is it a regional thing like that?
That's my understanding. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But now, but here's the thing that is now catching my eye, and I got to make sure I do not disturb on. But are these? Whatever the hell, those Dole, they buy the pasta sauce in the door of the fridge.
Prunes.
They're never, ever going to, they've never been opened. They're never going to get opened. What they're doing in there, I have no idea.
Yeah, it's eye candy. It's eye candy. It's just pure eye candy for your fridge. It's a decoration. By the way, I just realized something else in my roasting of you having cheese on two different rows of your fridge.
Cheese is very important.
I now see cheese on a third row of your fridge, the top row.
And it's the shittiest cheese.
Yeah, it's got shitty like taco, like processed taco cheese. Two bags of it. Not one. Okay, so as much as you want your little, I don't have vegetables because I go to the farmer's market. All right. Trying to be highfalutin.
I do try to be highfalutin.
You have a museum of processed cheese in this fridge.
And you also have me dead to rights too, because I could see the fake lemon juice as well, which I would claim I only do.
This thing?
No, that's yellow mustard.
Oh, that's mustard.
Come on.
Oh, here's the fake.
That's critical. Yeah, that's the fake lemon juice.
Next to your truff, your famous, the truff hot sauce.
Now truff, I'm a big fan of truff. And that's truff hotter sauce. The truff hot sauce is not hot enough for me. But no, next to it is the horseradish, which is an essential element of some of my specialties.
The other thing that disturbs me, if I may.
Clearly, I'm allowing you carte blanche.
In the door, the juice area, you have one big bottle of expensive organic orange juice.
Very good stuff, that.
Very good stuff. And right next to it, as if you grab it to drink it like juice, is a carton of beef broth. Like right next to it, like they were meant to be together. I don't know why this grosses me out so much, Ben.
Well, maybe because it's disgusting. I don't know. Now, here's the thing. The beef broth I got for something really specific, but I'm pretty sure it's still in there. It's not going to ever get used again. I used it. It's not a typical thing. But once you open it, it says refrigerate it. So, I really should have staged a photo. I followed your commands to the letter.
Some people shouldn't follow them, but you did.
Yeah, I did. I did.
And I'm here we are.
Okay, so now there's a big story there at the bottom.
On the bottom of the door, okay.
The bottom of the door, there's all of that junk is... Four of those are iced coffees, which I think is the most disgusting stuff in the world. Yeah. That somebody brought a student, you know, I coach out of part of my home and students will bring me things and they go in the fridge and they just sort of stay there. And I really ought to do something about it. But I do feel it at least the thing that separates this from my fridge at college is that there is not like a gasket of fucking grossness around everything. So that I feel pretty good about.
No, it's definitely clean. I mean, it almost looks like, you know what it looks like? It looks like it was staged like on a set of like, you know, like a rich single guy.
Well, listen, the thing I'm great at is eggs, and the eggs are there. The English muffin's there. That's a critical element.
Oh, do you make a good breakfast sandwich?
So one of the things I learned during lockdown that I never did prior to lockdown is I learned how to make a proper McDonald's egg McMuffin, which is something that I missed. And, you know, during lockdown, I really went to town. Like I have silicone rings to make the perfect sort of poached egg. And
oh,
I learned
no
it.
Way. And so, that's cool.
Listen, the first thing that I learned how to cook is a good breakfast. I'm really good at eggs. And that is because, you know, if you really want to impress somebody who's spent the night, you make them an excellent breakfast in the morning.
Ah, there's an ulterior motive.
That's it. So it may not necessarily be Sam in the sheets, but in the morning, you are going to be well fed at the very least.
Well, Ben, I think I need to have an intervention with you.
Yeah.
I think you need to treat yourself the same way you treat these people that stay over. You should have all different kinds of foods for all different kinds of meals. Not just the breakfast burrito for the flu. Not just the
fucking floozy. Listen, man, she really likes the breakfast burrito. But that's right. That's absolutely what that shredded cheese is doing up there.
Oh, my God.
It's got to be from a breakfast burrito.
I think it's Egg McMuffin. We keep calling it a breakfast burrito.
No. Egg McMuffin's a special thing.
Oh, okay. So the girl that you're dating will get the Egg McMuffin. The floozy gets a breakfast burrito to go. You've got like perfect to-go containers for them.
Here, I'll walk outside. I'll give it to you. There it is. Enjoy.
Wait, so take me through. So I love that you have the silicone rings. That's such a nerdy, fun detail about you.
No, I have it down to a science, man.
Do I need to spend the night with you to have one of these Egg McMuffins? I live two blocks away from you, but if that's what it takes.
I will be glad to make you an Egg McMuffin, but I will say that I've tried it with really good boar's head cheese, you have to use a shitty Kraft single for it to taste just right.
Oh, 100%. I co-sign with you on that.
You've got to. It doesn't work any other way.
Kraft singles have a very, very high fat content, which is why when they melt, they don't like fall apart. It just kind of melts nicely, and it's like it almost spoons the egg.
Oh no! I got it. So you get the egg into the silicone ring. Also, you use it's the only thing I have. I have Pam. It's the only thing I use Pam for is the Egg McMuffin. But you spray the silicone ring. You crack the egg just so. You use the shell to make sure that the yolk gets cracked. You put a little bit of water on the outside of it. You've already got the muffin toasting. If you're doing more than one, you got to toast them in the oven. But then you get that out, and then the timing of the building is essential to the quality of the thing.
What are you, a fucking short order cook? Do you live at a Waffle House? What's happening here?
I'm talking about lockdown, right? We all lost our minds during lockdown. And one of the crazy things I did was learn how to make a Mac Daddy OG English muffin.
Yeah, you perfected it though. It's like
perfect,
like Renoir trying to perfect the, you know, a still life. You were like, no, this is my masterpiece.
So the perfect English muffin, again, it all comes down to timing. You put the cheese down on one side of the toast first.
Okay.
You set the egg on the cheese, and then you put the Canadian bacon on the other side, and then you put the cheese on top as you assemble it. And then you wrap it in parchment paper and let it sit for 3 minutes.
Whoa. You do the wrap.
Yeah, you got it. It was the missing ingredient.
Wow.
And again, this is the mania of being in lockdown and figuring out what you can make that is hitting the pleasure center. And yet you can order it from yummy.com, because I was opposed to Instacart for some reasons.
Wait, hold on. First of all, show me on the doll where Instacart touched you. Second of all, that is high level egg and cheese sandwich right there. And it's funny. I remember reading an article in the New York Times where I think they were trying to recreate the perfect egg and cheese, and it didn't happen. And then like they realized that that's the move. It's like when you get an egg and cheese in the bodega, they wrap it in parchment paper, then aluminum foil, and then you take it to where you got to go. But while that's happening, there's a steaming.
It's alchemy. Steaming. Yes.
And
yes.
That steaming was the missing link that no one could figure out.
I can't believe I arrived at that independently.
It's the food version of how, like, of penicillin being created. It was completely a mistake. No one knew that that's what it was. But yeah, that is the steam, man. That's the missing link. Well done.
You say parchment and tinfoil. What I remember from the New York delis, because I spent the 90s in New York, and my God, those egg sandwiches. But what I remember about that is they have that special kind of paper that's foil on the outside and parchment on the inside, but it's really thin.
You know, it's funny. Whenever people ask me, what's your type, Dan? What are you into? I say foil on the outside, parchment on the inside.
You know, it's funny. I would have pegged you as that. Absolutely. Just from afar.
Listen, if I have to get pegged to get one of those English muffins.
It can be done. It can be done.
All right, let's go quickly into your freezer. I will tell you, I don't normally go into the freezers, but you and I have something in common here. Yeah. And I thought I had to bring it up. We both have these bougie-ass frozen wild blueberries that are fucking expensive, but delicious.
Fucking great. They're great. Not only are they great, my puppy goes nuts for them. She loves them.
Wow. Ben is so rich, he feeds his dog my treat meal.
Wait, she loves them.
I want to look them up. What is that? What is it called? What are they called? They're like frozen wild blueberries from Maine. Oh, yeah. Wymans. That's what they're called.
Wymans, yes. But they're magnificent.
So goddamn expensive, but they're so good. All right, man. Listen. We got work to do. Unfortunately, this is not like a Queer Eye for the Straight Guy where I'm going to come in and fix everything up. I just shame you and then leave you be.
Well, no, but it's funny because I've been in thinking about this and sort of knowing, and I'll be on my walk and I've been listening. I've been slowly digesting your podcast and I keep going, what the hell have I got myself into? He's going to ruin me and I'm going to have nothing to show for it.
No.
But I have a defense. Either way, I think in this conversation, we're going to get to why my refrigerator looks like it does. I think we will.
Well, I mean, there's no time like the present. Speak.
Here, I'll defend myself. And I wonder what your listeners might make of this. But the thing about me and my journey with food is that I was from 19 until 40, a chain smoker. Mm. And I mean, two and a half, three packs a day for 20 years.
No way.
I remember when I was in my early 20s, and I didn't even understand the trespass that this represented. I know it now, but I would go out with my grandfather when he lived in New York at the same time, maybe once every other month, to Smith and Walensky, and he would order whatever he would order, and then I would get the steak au poivre. Well done.
Oh, boy.
At Smith and Walensky. And my grandfather never made me feel badly about it. I assume he must have gotten looks. I didn't understand what a sin it was until I was 40 years old. I didn't get that because I couldn't taste anything.
Right.
But so a lot of my food habits, my at-home food habits were centered around, you know, what's the utility of food? The utility of food is making sure I get a second date, you know. And when I quit smoking was right at the time that the Pikey opened, and my friend, Chef Ralph Johnson, ran that kitchen. And he was the first chef that I knew firsthand and that I trusted. So when I quit smoking, mm-hmm. my palate changed, my willingness to try new things changed. The last decade of cuisine for me versus the first 40 years of my life, it has been an entirely different world. And things that I would never do, you know, starting with something as simple as a carpaccio or a tartare, I wouldn't touch it.
Right.
But the other thing that's changed since I quit smoking is my career changed to a degree that I've started to have gigs that have me living in foreign locales for extended periods of time. And it has become, to me, an essential element of knowing a culture in a way that I didn't quite understand it before.
What, the food?
The food is as important as any other element of knowing where you are, is seeing the food that they value.
What I'm gathering is that food wasn't the most important thing for you because you didn't have taste buds to taste the food. And then, like someone who was blind and was healed by the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, you could finally see. And now you were like, OMG. You're like a kid. You're like a kid who gets to discover these things for the first time again.
Yes, on all counts. And the thing, the one step further that I'll take it, because I've now come to know so many people who have chefs in their lives. And I'm not talking about people that have private chefs in their lives. And certainly I know them as well.
Humble brag right there. Just saying. Humble brag.
I have friends with private chefs.
It's not a big deal. We don't have to talk about it, but just know that I have friends with private chefs.
I also have friends who are private chefs to people who have private chefs. So I'm on both sides of that coin.
Yeah.
But having a chef, having somebody who knows food in your life, I think that you trust, is as important as having a doctor that you trust. It's an important feature in your life.
You definitely put all of your trust in like one place at a time. You're like a one. You don't cheat. You do not cheat on your restaurant. You're a loyal guy. I mean, I usually have like three or four in rotation, but I feel like they'll be like, you know, 40%, 20%, you know, what's 60 plus, and then a 40%. Yours are like 90% horses and then 10% other in what I see. You're there every night.
I'm going to give you 80% horses.
You're there 80% of the time. Okay, still, that's an interesting number. So tell me, what is it about that? Why does someone become, I'm not even going to call you a regular. Why does someone become a hyper regular?
Assuming it's not some profound pronounced mental illness of some sort. It is the what it is, has been for me, is again, with my work, I've been fortunate enough that I do a lot of travel. And I did a gig for the better part of 5 years that was in New York. And I would go away and come back and go away and come back. And you accuse me of highfalutin. I'm going to falute again and say that there is something meditative, restorative, something calming to me. I have in the past linked it to my sort of theory of a party, which is when you go to a party, you have the option of walking around the party all night and sort of going from group to group to group to group to group. Or my preference, find a seat you like and sit in it, and the party will eventually make its way around to you.
Oh, that is a confidence that I don't have. I am like a little gnat when I go to a party. I'm like, buzz around here, now buzz around there, and oh no, that person, I don't think they like me, I'm going to buzz around over here, and then I end up in the pantry with the door closed and the lights off, crying in the corner.
Well, yeah, see, next time, just start in the closet crying. See, and eventually everybody else is going to end up in there with you, and you're going to feel like, you're going to feel great.
Comforting me and saying, we're never inviting this guy to our party again.
Well, that's possible as well. Why are all the clothes drenched in tears? What's going on here?
It takes a certain amount of confidence, though, to have that mentality. And it's funny because that is kind of what you are at Horses. Like, you're a beacon of comfort for all of us, too, on the other side. Because I know when I walk into Horses, I know the staff now, but they're busy. If you're there, I'm beelining for you. Because it's like, oh, my emotional support human is here. So let me start here, and then I can venture out from here. Your search for familiarity also brings a familiarity for me, which is why you hold such a comforting place in my heart.
That makes me really happy. There was an interval during the Pikey days where a plaque was set at my seat with my name on it.
Oh, boy.
It got torn up one Thanksgiving by someone who clearly was not a fan of me.
I'm sorry about that. Okay, you were getting all the attention. No one looked at me.
I took a photo of it and sent it home to my family in Boston. And the response from my mother, I will not forget, which was, Benjamin, not since my grandson Will's photo was put up on the wall of Buff's Pub in Newton Center, have I been so proud of my progeny.
Oh, my God. That is hilarious. Are you Irish? Is that like going to Harvard for a Jew? Like
No, I'm not. I'm a mutt. My mom's mom is a Sicilian, and my mom's dad is a Russian Jew.
Oh, okay, got it.
So, as I like to say, Jewish father and a Catholic mother. So, I know guilt very well.
Yeah, you get double teamed.
Yeah.
The DP, the DP of guilt.
So when somebody tries to guilt trip me into something, I'm like, you know, you got to come more correctly than that.
You got to come correct. I love a good breakfast sandwich, so let's find out how they got to our table in the first place. The first breakfast sandwich appeared in 19th century East London and was sold to factory workers. This initial form of breakfast sandwich consisted of fried eggs, meat, and at times, cheese. The portable breakfast was convenient and filling for a grueling day at work in a factory, and this breakfast trend traveled all the way over the Atlantic to the US during the Industrial Revolution. Fun fact, Denver's local breakfast sandwich variation has eggs mixed with ham, green pepper, and onion. Famed food writer James Beard hypothesized that this variation may be a product of the nostalgia of the Chinese railroad workers who longed for egg foo young, a fluffy omelet-like dish made from eggs scrambled with veggies. The craving for convenience exploded in the 1950s, and the breakfast sandwich's place in history was cemented when a McDonald's franchise owner, Herb Peterson, invented the Egg McMuffin in the early 1970s. In 2021, the Egg McMuffin celebrated its 50th anniversary. Americans proved their appetite for this particular egg sandwich in 2015 when McDonald's bought a staggering 5% of all eggs produced in the United States. So I'm going to get to the questions that I love asking every guest.
Yeah, okay. I forgot. I didn't prepare these.
Oh, my God. Hopefully it's a little more prepared than your fridge was.
Oh, shit. Can I swear?
Yes. You may. What is your earliest fucking food memory?
Wow. The two popped to mind immediately. But I guess there's a good one and a bad one. The good one is the first time my grandmother took me, I think when I was 7 years old, to Benihana's in New York.
Fun.
For my birthday. And whatever it was, maybe it was an onion volcano, but whatever it was that I saw there, I thought was just magnificent.
That's a really good one. And I feel like Benihana might not be my earliest food memory, but I definitely remember it as a kid. Like, it's emblazoned in my head. That should be their ad. Like, Benihana, create your kid's earliest food memory.
And you know what? That could be their ad. Although, here's the thing. I remember what their ad was.
What was it? Benihana, watch your fingers. They're about to get cut off.
Well, this has to be 1979 in New York City. They had the billboard that said, every meal's a show and every show's a meal.
Oh, that's better than mine, which was keep your fingers away from the hot stovetop. No, I don't think so. But it's like I was always in constant fear of like some oil splattering, a splattering of oil. I don't know what that says about me. Probably nothing good. But
you don't want to operate from a place of fear if you can avoid it.
Yeah, you want to go into Benihana guns a-blazing. Ben, when he goes, he just walks in slow motion, punches the first person he sees, and then sits down. Wait, what was the second one? You said there was another memory.
Well, no, because when it popped into my head, there was a kid I went to grade school with named Bayan, and I went over. His mom or dad was a beekeeper. There were bees there. She put out dinner that was clearly very carefully prepared, but all of it was... I don't think I'd ever seen brown rice before. Like all the things were, there was oranges and things that shouldn't have oranges in them. Like everything was just disgusting to
me. Where was this?
This is somewhere in Newton, Massachusetts, or outside of Newton, Massachusetts. But I just remember her withering at the dinner table and saying, "So Ben's a picky eater." And I'm actually going to bring this up in therapy this week because it's that hits me really hard just now, just hearing it out of my own. But she called me a picky eater.
Wow.
Her food sucked, though.
Yeah.
That I remember, too.
Yeah. Wait, shots fired. What's her name? Hopefully she's listening right now.
Bion's mom, B-I-O-N. That I remember.
Oh, Bion. Oh, Bion. I thought your fucking Boston accent was like going nuts, and you were saying Byron, but you're like, yeah, his name was Bion.
Byron is my middle name. It's my grandfather's name. I'm not going to fuck up Byron.
Your accent is like if Fenway Park became a human being. If the duck tours could talk.
That's because you've seen me with drinking me. I think a lot of people don't even hear it.
I think when you start talking about your childhood, it comes out a little more, which, you know.
That makes sense.
My Long Island accent will come out more when I'm reminiscing as well. So,
where on Long Island did you grow up?
I grew up in Great Neck.
I know Great Neck. Great Neck is not unlike Newton. There's a lot in common. Seacliff, which is right next to Great Neck. My uncle Nino used to live in Seacliff.
Hey, Uncle Nino from Seacliff. That's definitely
Uncle Nino from Seacliff. Yeah.
Sicilian side. He's in construction.
Yes. He's an opera singer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. I totally racially profiled incorrectly there.
Well, Italian opera singers are also a bit of, you know.
Yeah. They're usually from fucking Italy, not from fucking Long Island. The Italian Long Island, they're not like the guys going to the Jersey Shore and not fucking singing, you know.
Nino Luciano was from Sicily. He's definitely Italian.
Wow. What is your death row meal? So let's think of a good reason for you to be on death row. You're at Smith and Wolensky. You order your steak au poivre, well done. And the waiter actually snickers. And you say, what are you fucking snickering at? He's like, hey, sorry, no one really orders it well done. And you say, oh, yeah? Oh, yeah? Let me ask you, you think this knife is sharp enough to cut through this well-done steak? Let's find out. And you just fucking start shiving this guy because you just can't take the humiliation. And then you yell, I'm not a picky eater, over his dead corpse.
And that gets me to prison?
Now you're in death. Not prison. You're on death row, bro.
Oh my
what
God.
Is your death row meal?
Do I get more than one course?
Yeah, you can course it out.
Okay, we're going to start with 2 dozen Wellfleet oysters.
Wait, what are the Wellfleets? Are they East Coast?
Absolutely East Coast. Wellfleet, Massachusetts. Great, finest oyster on the planet. Perfect balance of what I like. You know, the salinity is just right. They're not too sweet. They're not too creamy. They taste like the Atlantic. They are bright, and I could eat 1,000 of them.
How do they compare to Blue Points? Because that, to me, is what a Blue Point is. A Blue Point, to me, has a good balance.
Blue Points, to me, they're served so old, so they're so freaking gigantic. At least the ones that I got on Long Island, which is where they're native to, right? But, like, you go to Fisherman's
Wharf?
They're just too big for me. They're big. Yeah. Like, they're just big and plump. And I don't mind big. But big and plump, it's just a lot.
Are we still talking about oysters?
Yeah, we're talking about Blue Points. But the thing is, when people say an oyster is a certain size, I'm like, no, it's served at a certain size. You leave an oyster alone, it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's true.
Like a Kumamoto oyster can be big as fuck?
Yeah.
No way.
That's my understanding.
You're from oyster country.
I've had Wellfleets of all manner of size, and the size is a function of age. It's as is true with lobsters as well. I think it's true with almost all shellfish. But as long as we're talking oysters, my favorite subject, the very important thing to do with any oysters, you have 12, they're going to almost always be served with lemon, and you're going to sometimes cocktail sauce, sometimes a mignonette, and certainly horseradish. Mm-hmm. And the thing I would encourage anybody to do is the first oyster, don't put anything on it. Don't put lemon on it. Don't put anything on it.
Mm.
Just have the oyster.
Pro tip.
It'll tell you a lot about a lot of things.
I love that. So what are you tasting for? You're tasting for the freshness. You're tasting for the brininess.
The brininess, the freshness. There's another thing, which is not really often talked about, which is the silt content. how well shucked are they is also something that you're going to learn, although that doesn't change whether you put stuff on it or you don't. But some places will shuck them perfectly and you can just slide them right in. Other places, where the mistake tends to happen is on the bottom cut, the cup cut. There'll still be some sinew in there, and then you are taking back a blue point. You can't get the thing out, and it becomes a whole freaking mess.
Can I just pause you for a second?
Of course.
It's going to tie into something. I learned how to shuck oysters when I was interning at the Spotted Pig with Ralphie, the chef from the Pikey.
Did you know Ralph when he was at Spotted Pig?
I did. I was an intern at Spotted Pig for a couple summers, and he was such a delight in the kitchen. He was one of the best people, one of my best teachers. But that's where they taught me how to shuck an oyster. And let me tell you, it ain't easy, precisely because of the silt part that you're saying. It's so easy to get little pieces of sand or whatever. If your knife isn't constantly being cleaned, and it takes a lot more finesse than you think. And then also you have to, like you said, you have to cut the bottom, the part that's connected to the bottom. And then you have to, they would make us flip the oyster within the shell.
Oh, smart. That's smart.
So just to like double check that you did it.
That's so, you know, before it goes to the customer, you know that thing is good to go. That's smart. Yeah. That's a very smart thing to do. Another thing that people make the mistake of is when they put it on crushed ice. If that ice touches that oyster meat at all, you've ruined the oyster.
Wow.
Because it's still alive right there. You freeze it and you are completely changing the character of the flavors. You're completely changing the character of the bite.
I feel like I'm picturing you explaining this whole monologue to the warden for your death row meal.
Oh, I forgot I'm on death row.
And he's like, sir, I'm going to get you the oysters, but fuck, now I got to get the ice right.
Okay, so I'm on death row. I've gone through my 24 well fleets. And then I probably would want to extend things as much as possible. So I would probably go with, let's say, my salad. Why don't we go with, I think, one of the best salads I've had in a very long time, which is the Caesar at Horses, which is a magnificent, magnificent salad.
Endive.
Endive, which you don't think is going to work. The endive you think is going to leave it too bitter, but the counterpoint of the dressing is balanced impeccably, and you end up with a really full rounded flavor.
Yeah.
And it doesn't taste like a Caesar can. A Caesar is one of those things, by the way, that I think, do you do that when, do you have like a goat, if you're trying out like a Chinese restaurant for the first time, do you have an order that lets you establish whether or not this is a finer or less fine establishment based on the quality of it?
Now I'm picturing the warden being like, sir, this is not a Q&A. I just need to take your order for the death row meal. No, I'm just kidding. yes. Look, obviously, yes. I think, you know, if you're in a restaurant that skews French, their omelet is going to be the telling thing, how they make their omelet. I think that, I don't know. That's a great question, though. Like, what is the litmus test meal, the litmus test dish? What were you going to say? So for Chinese restaurants?
For Chinese, my theory is hot and sour soup is very telling of the quality, you know, how much cornstarch is in there, how much, you know. And as a younger man, I would say General Tso's, but I think that's always disgusting now. I don't like General Tso's chicken anymore.
I don't like it.
I'm too good for it now. Yeah.
Now that he's stopped smoking, his taste buds are all bougie. He can't have General Tso's.
As a smoker, General Tso's is that actually breaks through the cigarette in just a perfect kind of way. In fact, you haven't lived unless you've had a lit cigarette while you're eating General Tso's. That's really the proper way to do it.
Wait, would you smoke your cigarette while eating Chinese food?
Dan, I would go to a friend's house who he loved Cuban cigars, and I would enjoy a Cuban cigar with him. And we're talking a very expensive Cuban cigar, another humble brag, bougie thing to say, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would get halfway through the cigar and I would put it out so I could have a cigarette. And then I'd finish the cigarette and I'd go back and I'd finish the cigar.
Wow. That's commitment. That's commitment to the game.
I'm very glad. I'm now 11 years without one, but I was the finest cigarette smoker you've ever met. Oh shit, I forgot.
No, sir, we were sorry. There's a stay of execution now. The warden said he's tired of hearing your menu, and he's just going to let you go free. You're not on death row anymore.
No, because I wanted to, because there's one of the most perfect morsels I've ever had in my life, and I've tried to get other places to make it.
Give it to me.
It's a place in Boston, in Back Bay, but they presented, and I can't even tell you what the drizzle was, but the drizzle was everything, but it was four pieces of beef carpaccio with four perfectly, and when I say perfectly, I mean it, perfectly fried oysters in the center of the carpaccio.
Ooh,
and you ate it with your hands. You sort of picked up the carpaccio around the oyster, made a bit of a dumpling, and it's blowing my mind thinking about it right now. It's so good.
That's very fun. It's interesting. The Koreans actually have a dish where they will slow roast a pig shoulder, and they'll take lettuce cups and they'll put a little bit of rice, a little bit of the pork, and a raw oyster inside, and then whatever sauce, and eat that. The oyster with land animal, surf and turf, oh baby. Yeah. That is a sexy surf and turf.
So I'm sorry, Caesar salad's going out.
Okay.
Warden, I need the carpaccio with the fried oyster. So
The warden has died 7 years ago.
Wait a minute. Don't I get an entree and a dessert before I have to die, right?
The warden is no longer amongst us. The warden sat in the chair himself and electrocuted himself.
Oh, God. Okay, fine. I'll just hurry through. Then I'd do an apov, but I'd get it done rare, medium rare.
You'd get the Smith & Walensky apov to remember those grandpa dinners?
In honor of Malcolm.
That's cool.
And then I'd end it with the finest dessert known to man.
Give it to me.
Creme brulee?
Oh, okay. You know what's so funny? My finest dessert known to man is also like a basic dessert. I'm a huge fan of basic desserts. For me, I would go with a tiramisu.
There you go. But, you know, it's funny. The basics are where I think food gets elevated.
Oh, yeah. And 100%.
Because anybody can make a creme brulee. Anybody can make a tiramisu. Anybody can make an omelet to a point.
Yeah.
But the distance between something, when you turn something that somebody has eaten every week of their life or every month of their life, when you make that same set of ingredients into something that can bring a tear to your eye, and food absolutely can make you cry. I've had it happen more than once. That you're in the hands of
that was
chef.
That was because I did punch you in the nuts while you were eating that burger. So that, I don't know if that counted. I was drunk. I was hammered.
Listen,
I'm sorry.
That was just a light misting around the eyes. That's not quite a tear.
What is the best high end meal you've ever had?
Define high end.
Fancy, highfalutin.
The finest meal was in France, was in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
That was a 7-course meal, but that was a proper 7-course meal that was financed by still one of my closest friends who had been working. It was our sophomore year at University of Chicago, and we were in Paris, and we had this meal, and it's going to make me sound like an awful American, but I guess I am, but we finished the meal with coffee and cigars, and then we walked to the Eiffel Tower, and this was in the days when you could get right up to the Eiffel Tower, and it was surprised that there were sort of vagrants who were sleeping underneath it, and it was this sort of dichotomy of where we had been to where we were, and sort of the beauty.
And then I remember you told me this story before. Why was it again that you kicked the vagrants with the cigar in your mouth? You said it was like it just added to the you know, you needed to show them who was boss or something?
No, I think it was some sort of crack about the Alamo, and I was told that's the wrong kind of racism. You're doing it entirely wrong. But I wonder about this. You know, Sting said once, I heard him at a convocation from a Berklee College of Music, and he said this thing about music, that music, the longer he spends on it, he understands more and more. And he might have been quoting somebody himself, but he said that music is really how we frame silence. Mm. And I think that's an interesting thought. But I wonder, isn't food how we frame things too on a certain, like, I think meals anchor themselves to you because of the quality of the meal. But I think they also anchor you to the people that you shared that meal with.
Right.
And they anchor you to the place you were when you all shared that meal. So forever, that was me and my friend Ben and my friend Alana and the three of us. All of us remember that meal. We'll always remember that meal.
But what was the name of the restaurant?
I guess
you don't remember that meal. I guess you don't remember that meal.
You think that that's what makes for the memory of a meal is that you remember the restaurant? I certainly remember what we ate.
No, I agree with you. I always say life is just dead time between meals. But I agree.
Fair.
I agree. That's that. The anchoring quality of a good meal is like nothing else.
No question.
Speaking of which, best low-end meal you've ever had. Is it going to be your Egg McMuffin? I think that's okay the way you...
How can homemade ever be a low-end meal?
I mean, low-end can be a homemade thing. That's okay.
Oh, there's no challenge. There's no challenger.
Okay, give it to me.
Done. Harold's Chicken in Chicago.
Harold's Chicken?
Done. The what best.
What the hell is Harold's Chicken?
What the hell is Harold's Chicken?
Hey, you can't shame me on my own podcast.
Harold's Chicken Shack is an icon of Chicago cuisine, an icon of Chicago, particularly Southside Chicago cuisine. But there is one, I haven't been to it yet, but apparently, and we can do this together, there is one apparently that has opened up on Hollywood Boulevard.
Okay.
You would go to Harold's Chicken Shack and you would get a half white or half dark bird. It would come with two pieces of Wonder Bread. You could get hot sauce that was really hot, barbecue sauce, hot or barbecue or both. And you could get, and it came with these soggy fries. And you had to pay through bulletproof glass. And there was a bulletproof glass carousel that would spit like a lazy Susan. And you'd get your order and your RC Cola and you'd take it back to the dorm and you'd open that thing up and hold, you'd rip the chicken apart and you'd take the chicken and the French fries, and you'd mush it into the bread, and then you'd douse it into the hot sauce, and oh my God.
Jeez.
So good.
It sounds like you went to war with that chicken. I love it. Well, I don't know what your relationship is with the sauce anymore. I was going to ask what your favorite drunk food is, but you and I would drink a lot at Horses. You'd always have a beer, a pint there, and lately, that pint has been replaced with... A fake beer.
I have changed my relationship with alcohol.
Mm.
I have been sober through, well, California sober from right. all year long, with the exception of some wonderful drinks in Liverpool. And as of last weekend, a lot of wonderful drinks in Tombstone, Arizona.
Right. You are just on mushrooms 24/7 now, but now.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole other. Yes. Is your iPad dripping? Because mine is like, I don't know if I need to call somebody.
So what is your favorite drunk food?
Well, if I'm in New York, it's a diner or it's an egg sandwich. But my absolute go-to drunk meal, without question, you can't get any because it was a Greenblatt's deli.
Oh, yes. Wait, was it the pastrami sandwich there?
It was the number 5 triple decker on sourdough.
What was that?
Swiss cheese, Russian dressing, 3 pieces of sourdough, corned beef, and pastrami. And that was, I think, $22.
Yeah.
it was worth $22. We had a theory that around the high holidays, Greenblatt's got their freshest product. So particularly at the end of fast, the food was at its finest. And so we would get there long before the sun went down.
So we could get
first crack on the fresh food.
So these poor people are fasting and you're like, nah, I'm not fasting. I just wanna take the best cuts that these Jews are gonna come running in for.
Yes, yes. We would jump the line.
Oh my God. You know what? We don't accept you anymore. You're not a Jew.
I'm out of the tribe.
You're out. Your mom's, whatever.
Oh, son of a bitch. I hate to do that.
What is your hangover cure? Egg sandwich.
Oh, is it cuisine or what actually works?
Oh, wait. No, what actually works? What was it?
Well, I was a bouncer for a long time. And if you're a bouncer in New York, that means you're sober until 4:30 in the morning. And then you need a drink. And so you go out to after hours and you're drinking from 4:30 to probably, 8 a.m. And your hangover starts at 6 p.m. The hangover cure that absolutely works is Alka-Seltzer plus cold medicine.
Plus cold medicine?
Alka-Seltzer plus cold medicine.
Why not just regular Alka-Seltzer?
Because you don't have the painkiller. So you plop, fizz, and Alka-Seltzer plus cold medicine. And that is like mainlining. You are right as rain in about 10 minutes.
Wow. Pro tip.
Pro tip.
You're a waste of sobriety with those pro tips.
Listen, it's
come back to the dark side, man.
It's how you know everybody in Arizona has no idea that I'm sober most of the time. I was drinking like a professional there. But for a meal on the other side of an awful night drinking, red, I'm gonna want eggs. Yeah, it's diner food, I think, is what I'd maybe go to Mel's, maybe go to Norm's.
Who's your favorite celebrity food personality?
Currently or of all time?
Besides Anthony Bourdain. It can't be Anthony Bourdain.
I know who it is because I love watching him. I love his enthusiasm. It's Jacques Pepin.
Oh, classic. That's probably my favorite one too.
I love that guy. Although there's also a Boston guy who does Asian food.
Ming Tsai.
I like that he combines the kitchen with street food and is sort of a tour factor. But bottom line, Jacques Pepin, the way he presents it, the way he talks about it, the way he includes his daughter, this whole sort of family, he makes it so inviting. And when you watch his technique, it's clear this guy knows what he's doing.
Hey, man, we have two things in common, okay? Expensive-ass frozen blueberries and Jacques Pepin.
That's a win. Excellent.
Desert island food. You're trapped on a desert island. One food you're never going to get tired of. What is that food? It's got to be that egg sandwich.
Well, no, let's presume that oysters are plentiful in the ocean.
No, but would it be oysters?
No, because I'm right on the ocean. I'm going to be able to get oysters. I'm going to get oysters. The sea is going to provide me oysters. I have no doubt of that.
Okay.
So I want something I can't get on a desert island. On a desert island.
You're finding loopholes here, which I don't know that I approve of, but I'll just let him slide.
No. Veal saltimbocca.
Veal saltimbocca. Wow. You're never going to get tired of veal saltimbocca?
No, you know what? When you put it that way, I am.
That's like for those of you who don't know, that's like pounded out veal with prosciutto on the inside and then like cheese, and then it's rolled up with basil and there's a...
The first serving on the desert island of veal saltimbocca, I'm going to think I hit the jackpot, but you're absolutely right. The second one, I'm going to be like...
Two bites into veal saltimbocca, and I'm like, I think I'm done. I think I'm done for the year.
This was a mistake. Okay, so...
I'm going to take oysters, because I think it actually is oysters for you.
Yeah, but the thing about oysters is if I'm thinking about survival...
You're taking this too literal, okay? You're going to be fine.
You went through... How I got on death row, and you're saying I'm taking this too literally.
you think you're like auditioning for an episode of Alone, and I'm like, no, it's okay.
Okay, fine. A ham and cheese omelet. A perfect ham and cheese omelet.
Oh, okay.
I'll never grow tired of that.
Yeah, that's a good one. Is there a food you can't stand eating?
Yeah, it's a variety of food I can't stand eating. I don't like squash and squash varieties. Eggplant, I'm okay with now. I didn't used to be. But squash, pumpkin, I don't mind the flavor. It's just the texture for whatever reason.
Wow.
Anything that, any sort of really sort of mealy kind of texture.
How about zucchini?
Zucchini is one of them. Yeah. Zucchini, again, if you put it in a ratatouille or something, I don't mind the flavors. I don't. But if you give me too much zucchini and it's cooked in a way that it's just too sort of soft and mealy, again, is the word I come to.
Well, in the words of Bayan's mom, you are a picky, picky eater.
Picky eater. Yeah. Well, that's the one I still haven't overcome. It's squash.
My favorite question now, what is or what are your restaurant pet peeves?
This is a good one. I'm a real stickler about a lot of things.
You go to restaurants more than most people that I know. So this is a great question for you.
Well, this is not exactly food related. I am very unhappy when a check is requested and it doesn't come promptly.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I find that very irksome. Like because sometimes I will ask for a check and the entree hasn't arrived yet.
What?
Sometimes I will. If I'm in a rush, I don't want to tell the kitchen I'm in a rush.
Wow.
But I want to be able to leave the moment I need to leave. When a kitchen or a restaurant supersedes their understanding of my time, that's a pet peeve for me.
Wow.
If I'm asking for the bill, I want it when I ask for it. That's maybe a weird pet peeve, but that's a pet peeve of mine.
But let me ask you, at Horses, which again, you're there almost every night, do you pay the bill there or do you have a running tab?
Well, there's a funny thing. There's a guy that at Horses who, when I ask for the bill, it's always a freaking delay on the bill. And it's going for like a month. It's pissing me off whenever I ask for the bill. It's like he's taking forever on the bill. What the fuck is I ask for the bill? I want to go. And I'm getting, you know, righteous fury, indignation is building in me about this affront to, you know, again, you know my time better than my time. And I finally realized what he's been doing this whole time is he's been waiting to hear from management because he hasn't wanted to charge me.
Oh my God. Amazing.
And I'm sitting here feeling like a total jackass.
You're like cursing him and his family under your breath.
Well, yeah, you never know.
But do you have a standing tab? Do you have a standing tab there or no? You pay every.
No, I pay.
Wait, hold on.
They don't charge me. Like they charge every.
Yeah. But for someone who has, your pet peeve is when the bill doesn't come on time. You go to a regular restaurant almost every single night.
Yeah.
They love you so much, they'll do anything for you. Why don't you tell them, here's my credit card, leave a running tab, and at the end of the month, I'll pay everything. Or here's my credit card, automatically charge whatever 20% tip on everything, and just don't ever bring me a bill. This could take your restaurant experience to the stratosphere.
My restaurant experience is already to the stratosphere. I get treated very well where I go. And I'm delighted by that.
But we can slay your pet peeve.
Well, but no, because then I would be the other pet peeve, which is over entitled. I believe that I'd have to ask them, and I'm sure if I wanted to arrange something, I could get it arranged. But I do. I think that when you're running a business like that, that closing the books at the end of each day is quite important. I think the people that forget their credit cards, and there seem to be people that do that chronically. I don't understand how those people do that. But
That's because you don't drink alcohol anymore, and now the world is opening up to you. Your eyes are opening again. You're having a second eye opening after you smoke cigarettes. You open your eyes. You're like, why are these people walking awkwardly when they leave the restaurant? Why do they seem to not be able to walk in a straight line?
You've seen me very drunk, and I think you might agree that my autopilot is very, very good. And the very nice thing about being an aging heavy drinker, it used to be if I had a foggy memory of what I had done the night before, I had said something awful to somebody or I had done something regrettable or this. What I've learned in the last 5 years, if I have a foggy memory of it, it's because I fell asleep at the bar. You know, it's an entirely different. It's not anything to be proud of, but at least I haven't, you know, crushed somebody's spirit. So that's a better thing.
Silver linings. Ben, this has been delightful. Tell the people where they can find you.
You can find me on Instagram as Big Ben Davis. I believe that is also where I am on Threads. first time I've said that out loud.
Wow.
And you can find me on Twitter.
X.
But I'm there at Tooda, T-O-O-D-A. And I haven't done anything with it yet. I don't know that I will do anything with it yet, but I am on TikTok at Benjamin Byron Davis.
Well, that was not a good sell for people to go follow you on TikTok. You're like, I don't even fucking know if this thing still exists, but I'm on TikTok.
Follow me on TikTok and see the first time I make a stupid video as I intersect with the algorithm that is going to destroy us all.
I will say it's worth, he's definitely worth a follow, but you should definitely go to Ben's Instagram. Take a look at that beautiful mug that I get to look at every night when I go to horses and I open that door and I see that face and it puts a smile on my face all the time. Ben, thank you for being my emotional support human at horses. And I hope to see you there very soon.
Dan, I can't believe I've made it through alive. Thank you so much for having me. If I get a new refrigerator, I'll stage it and have a much better showing. But I hope I redeem myself.
No, you don't change, okay? Stay the where you are.
All right. Thank you.